Welcome to Accounting High.
What are your thoughts on OKRs?
What's the OKR?
You like your KPIs. What about OKRs, objectives and key results?
I never heard that expression, but there's a point that everybody's missing. You got to give information to a client that they can act on. I've seen these fantastic dashboards. People don't look at the dashboards. Like the guy that I told you who measured the pounds of steel. That was his KPI, the number of pounds. That's all he needed to know. I could give him 8 dashboards. Doesn't mean a thing. It'd be too much, and he couldn't act on it. But the pounds each day he could. 3 numbers, 4 numbers. That's all a client should get every day.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountants, see your way back to desktop accounting advisory and tech apps adopt. Went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same. Raleigh is the spot where I edutain. Like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast. Next one we drop, cause you know it don't stop. It's 24/7 on the Accounting High Lot. TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk. Cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop. Then we lean back and nod, cause the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
Oh, cow, cow, counting high, OKR.
Introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Ed Mendlowitz.
We're going to have a problem here.
Back on air with us. I'm so happy to have you on, Ed, because last time we recorded, it was February 2022. We were still sons of CPAs back then, and I had Ackerman on with me, and it was a blast. You taught me so much in that episode. And the biggest thing that you taught me was how to always be learning your whole life. You're always learning, and there's still so much to learn. That resonated with me so much. And it's something that I keep with me too, because it's the way I feel. Like, I feel like you never know. We still don't know anything at any age. There's always so much more we could be learning. So I'm pleased to have you on. I'm so happy.
Glad to be here.
And our students, you're in for a treat too, because this is really bridging the gap here. I mean, Ed reached out to me yesterday and asked if he could interview me on the show. I've never been interviewed on the show. So you're interviewing the janitor at Accounting High, custodian here, Scotty OKR. I don't know where we start for here, Ed.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what precipitated it. I have an image of you, which I think is the kind of image you want people to have of you, which is a little offbeat, a little off center. But I looked in at the bio, right under your name, and you said you're running a $2 million practice. And I said, this guy is for real. He's running an accounting practice. Most of the people that do interviews and do consulting are not practicing accountants. They have a gig. They want people to hire them to tell them how to run their practice, but they really don't know what they're doing. But you're a guy running a practice, so that interested me. So I understand you're doing over $1.5 million in accounting services.
Yeah, well, on LinkedIn we round up, right? We round up to the nearest million on there. But yeah, it's yeah. I mean, like, you got to walk the talk too. If we're going to be talking about these kind of things, I'm talking about real life. I'm talking about what I'm really doing at my firm. I kind of put myself out there as that offbeat, because that's how I've always been. That's just me. If you ask my team, we're having our Christmas party today. That's just how I am. That's how we've always been. We've always done things a little bit differently, but it's worked out in the end. And I like to talk about that because the way we do things so differently. And I met other people out there that are doing things very differently. So I'm not the only one. So that's why that's why I wanted to do a show in the first place with Ackerman. And I got to meet people like you. Like, when I'm driving up the Jersey Turnpike and I see the Witham building, I'm like, wow, I interviewed Ed. That was so cool. I always tell, like, my family when we're driving, when I see the Witham building. So that happened this Thanksgiving when we drove up there. So
Well, let me ask you, you're doing over $1.5 million. That's a lot of volume. That's a good sized business. And just to put it in a little different perspective, you have a business that's worth $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Forget what you're making from it and forget what you're generating. You have a substantial business. Yet
I have a retirement plan.
Well, we hope it's a retirement plan. but you have no partners. You have about 10 people who work for you, about 10 full-time. I think you got about 9 full-time.
Yep.
People. You got 1 independent contract. So you have 10 people. So
I don't include myself in that 9. You could include me. But
11-person firm, including you. And you're doing $1.5 million, over $1.5 million. That's a business. That's a big business. So one of the things that come to mind is, how do you manage it? I have the impression from meeting you and talking to you and listening to your programs, and I could tell just from our interaction since yesterday that you're very highly organized. I want to know, how do you manage? How can you manage?
My office is about as organized as yours. We know where things are, but it's a bit of a mess if you look at it from the outside in. And I think that's what people think of me too when they look at me. I look like and I feel like a bit of a mess, but I guess there is a method to it and there is some organization. The firm, I would say that it's more organized now than it was when I was at the center of it. About 2 years ago, I kind of removed myself from the center. Actually, it was more than 2 years because it was during COVID. It was always sort of my plan to get out of the daily operations and to see what it would be like if I could just sit in that top seat of the firm, like CEO or like visionary, and remove myself from the processes, which was very hard to remove yourself, especially when you have control issues like myself and you want things to be perfect. You want things, everything aligned, and it's so hard to let go of the vine. It's so hard to let go of things. I don't want to go too deep into all that. I want to answer your question. So it is pretty organized, but I have people running it for me. I have people that like organization, that like stability. I never, even as much as I liked things to be perfect, I was never stable as an owner because I always wanted to change things. I always wanted to do the next best thing. And then people are telling us we need to start getting into these services. Let's start getting into more advisory. And we can talk about that too. But it was me getting out of that day to day and realizing how much I needed my management team and the types of roles that I needed. And so I have 2 people that are basically running the firm for me. I have a front, like, let's say front facing, client facing, client services. We call them client success management. I have that person who handles the front of house, so to speak. And then I have an operations, let's say COO or integrator or back office, and he manages the team. Neither of them do client work. They're instructed not to. They may fill in some gaps here and there, but I do have 2 people that are basically running the firm for me, which allows me the freedom to do this fun stuff, like my raps and this show, or running or being the janitor at the high school.
Actually, what you've really done is you've promoted yourself from being the CEO to becoming the chairman of the board.
Yeah, because I don't even take a salary anymore.
Well, I'm not talking about the salary, but you basically have a COO, and you probably have 2 different people, like an executive vice president and a CEO. So you have the firm running. You're not involved with the day-to-day activities, from what I gather. But let me ask you, how do you keep in touch with clients? You keep in touch with clients? How do you maintain client loyalty?
No, that's a great question, yeah. So I always saw clients as my friends, and they never really were. When I was in the business, when I was doing the work, clients weren't really my friends. They were clients. I mean, it felt like friends. That's kind of how you would describe them too, with the relationships you have. But at the end of the day, they're clients. And so as I was removing myself out, I started to take some stuff personally, or I started to feel a lot of guilt that I wasn't there for them because other people were servicing them. And this was like they started building other relationships. They would reach out to me here and there. But at this point, currently right now, they actually really are left with just friends. Like I had friends that became clients, or I had clients that I was really close to, but now the only thing I do keep in touch with is like happy Thanksgiving or what's up, or let's go have lunch. And we don't even talk business at all. It's just like we talk life. And so I'm left with just a bunch of friends that are still clients of the firm. I don't even get involved in the details anymore because I trust that they're in really good hands, and they know they're in good hands. Like they talk great about my team. So
you have a little over 100 business clients. Mm-hmm. So that would be about 15 grand a client in that area. But the clients, what kind of work do you do for those clients, for a typical client?
Yeah. So, and it's probably not about 15 grand because we still have other like one-off tax work and other things that we do too to get to fill in the gaps there. But we do tip. I mean, I would say that the most basic sense, the way that you would describe it too, is without all the fancy terms, we're basically doing write-up for the tax return. So we're doing the business accounting and keeping the books aligned. We're doing tax planning for a lot of them, or tax forecasting. We're creating their withholdings. We're making sure they have the right tax payments paid in. We're basically there with them all year round. We have a relationship with the client and we're working with them year round, and they're just paying us a flat monthly price. So every one of those clients is paying us average, you know, 1,000 give or take a month.
What point of contact do you or any of the people working for you have with clients on a one-on-one basis?
So all of our U.S. team, which that they are the front facing, they're the relationship manager. They are the client. They're talking to the client. They're interfacing with the client. The team that we have in the Philippines is typically working with the team here, and they're doing a lot of the work, back office work. There are a lot of, I mean, at this point, they may even be doing the tax returns too, but they're doing a lot of the accounting. They're keeping all the books updated, and our team is maintaining the relationship. So our CPAs here are basically interfacing and maintaining the relationship with the client.
So if they see that a client is going to owe money, they would call the client?
Yeah. Yeah. And they should be having regular meetings with the client too, to be planning, and, you know, maybe like monthly meetings or quarterly meetings with the client too, to be discussing those.
Now, I would presume you brought the clients in.
How did you get? Yeah, we get a lot of inbound leads too. We started getting a lot of inbound leads in the early, like 2015, through other online directories. So like Xero, through Gusto, and a lot of the other online platforms that we use, they list the accountants, and then people find us through there a lot. We also still get a lot of referrals, but we're very selective. So we have a very detailed type form that weeds out anybody that wouldn't be a good fit, and we're left with a lot of good leads. And at this point right now, I think our team has said we are at capacity, so they just cherry pick the ones that they like best if they want to take on new clients.
So you're basically running a professional service business as a business with really what kind of loyalty is built up for your firm? Is there any cultural loyalty that goes with the clients, or just the repetitiveness of being available and handling their problems?
It's a great question. I guess the loyalty comes in the relationship, right? And the loyalty is, clients don't leave that often unless they stop their business or they cease operations, or, you know, somebody dies. They don't typically leave that much because we're not, I mean, I always like to tell my team, if you're not giving them a reason to stay, then you're giving them a reason to leave. But clients don't typically leave that much because this is something that's like, again, it's like routine, and the loyalty comes in being there for them and being honest with them. We can make mistakes, and there's still loyalty there because everybody makes mistakes. So I think the loyalty comes in, and we don't even have an office anymore too. So everything is remote, which is really hard for me to manage. That's also partly why I'm so far removed from everything. So it's hard for me to fully answer a lot of these questions, because I would have to start talking to clients and asking that question about loyalty, because I've never really considered that. I think it comes in the trust. You know, we're trusted advisors, we're trusted service, and we're interfacing with scary people. Like IRS is scary for a lot of our clients. So we're the trusted middle people to interface with a scary institution. I think that plays a lot into it too.
If a staff person that's working on a client, one of the CPAs, decides to leave and he wanted to poach one of your clients, would they be able to?
They sign NDAs and stuff, but those, you can't hold those up. And if somebody left and they took clients, I would hope they had a really good reason to do it. You know, like there's not much I would be able to do. And they're working directly with the clients too. So if they wanted to do that, they probably could. But I don't think they would want to. In my eyes, they don't want all that extra admin overhead to deal with their own. They like the fact that everything else is being handled for them and they just work with the clients. They don't want to have to go start on their own and then work with clients individually. I think that if they did want to do that, power to them. I've had people leave. They never really took clients with them, but I've had people leave. They want to go start their own thing before multiple times. Sometimes they come back too. And after they've tried, I have two people with me now that have left and come back. So I don't know.
We have Wivem has partners that have left and come back and then she became partners. So
yeah,
this happens. But what I'm just trying to get at, is there any loyalty to you or to the firm that you have? What a loyalty might be to the person that
yeah, that's a great
every month. Yeah,
but and I see where you're getting at too. I mean, there's the people that I still have with me now, because we've gone through a lot of changes as a firm. My team with me is all of them, I think, have been with me over 5 years, 6 years. My ops manager's 13 years now. The client facing, the front facing, he's like 7 years. So I think there's loyalty there built in, and there's trust and there's familiarity, and we're all friends. I'm friends with my team. I don't see them as like anything. I've always been like that too. It's just, you know, we all get together and hang out. And if they want to start talking business with me, they're not going to get much of an answer, because I'm not interested to talk about that anymore. I want to talk about their lives. I want to hang out. So I think that's like, I think you need to have that in order to build the loyalty and to build the trust and everything else around it. I think I just naturally, that's how always things have always been with me.
Are your team members growing professionally and personally?
I hope so. I like to push them. I think a lot of them are growing more personally now and less professionally because they don't have that direction. And I'd like to provide that for them, but I also don't know how, because I'm still trying to grow personally and do these other things. So I'm trying to provide an environment where they can grow, but it requires them to be pushing themselves to grow. And they're in charge of a lot of this. Like my management team, they will make more money if they take on more clients. They're incentivized. They still are getting, they're getting commission on sales now too, because they're handling sales. And so I think they are growing. It actually, to go back and answer your question, I see growth as major mountains of growth, at least personally. But for them, they're doing more than they were doing a couple of years ago, because they're doing the things that I was doing. So I guess to answer your question, yeah, they're growing as professionals.
On your client base, you sell added services to more than 5% of your clients a year.
Added services meaning?
Substantial added service.
I think there's a lot of opportunity there with our clients. I think that the one of the last things that I was doing as very active in the firm was trying to get us into doing cash flow forecasting and more of that type of work, more like actual business cash flow help, and all the changes that it was going to require, like doing more accrual based books and books to be able to look forward with cash flow. I met a lot of resistance. A lot of my team, they want to just do what already happened. They want to do the tax return. They want to do that type of work. And so I was met with, at that point, I probably burnt myself out a little bit trying to bring on different things. And I realized at our core, what we were doing is working and it's very profitable, and we should stick to what we know best. So I haven't added too many services within us. You know, it might be something where we partner up with somebody and we start tacking on some new services, and maybe we could do that. I've got some visions for that in the future, but I kind of put all that stuff on hold. And other added services, like doing more for them, I think there's still opportunities there. Yeah.
Well, I see a business. I see an accountant with 100 business clients. To me, that would be a field day to offer them business advisory services of some form, like cash flow forecasting.
Yeah.
Could be a good idea. Maybe help. Actually, I don't want to get involved in.
No. I like where you're going, because I was just talking about this yesterday with a friend of mine, Nicole McKenzie, who's another co-host on the show sometimes. The possibility of offering a lot more. It's a gold mine. It's a diamond mine. James Ashford talks about this a lot in his book. You know, you're sitting on that diamond mine, And you just have to mine those diamonds, because of those 100 clients that I have, there's probably 30 or 40 that could use a lot of extra services and a lot more. You know, it's there's a lot to be done. And it kind of overwhelms me thinking about it sometimes too, because I'm off here doing my own thing. And, you know, so I feel torn in a couple different directions at the moment.
You're in a situation. I think of a firm that actually they were just taken over by private equity. I was at a meeting with Barry Mellon's son just before COVID.
Yeah.
And somebody asked the question about how do firms get into advisory services? Barry's talking about doing advisory services. So I looked to see who asked the question. And when it was over, I went over to him and I asked him about the advisory services that his firm does. Well, it turns out that I didn't know it was a kid. He was a kid. He had 11 years experience, but his father was the managing partner of the firm. Mm. And I knew his partner. In fact, I helped the father when he merged in 20 years earlier with that firm. And I found out that the partners are doing a lot of advisory services for the clients, but they're not telling the staff.
Mm.
There's a guy with 11 years experience that wanted to do it. He didn't know how to start, but I also think he lacked the imagination to find out what the partners were doing on his clients that he worked on so he could learn that. So I think that you need a push from the top and you need a push from the bottom. But I look at an accounting practice as a business, and you do too, because you have a COO, whatever the title is, you have a COO running your business, and you sort of step back from doing the daily work. But you have potential at least $250,000 of added revenue a year from your existing
base. Yeah.
Not talking about normal increases and everything. Now, you might have the staff people, I'm sure they're doing a great job, but they're also comfortable in what they're doing, and they don't seem to be pushing to go outside their comfort zone, which is okay. But maybe you could bring in somebody that has that proclivity to look at your clients and see where you might be able to provide added services to clients. Some of the stuff is very easy, like give you a simple thing. Client has inventory, just check their insurance policy that the inventory is covered properly by the insurance. And then you could offer to do an insurance analysis. Anyway,
I love this. This is great. And that's the next phase or the step for me, is to find that right person that would do that. And it doesn't put any extra burden or stress on my staff, because this is just coming in over the top of what they're doing anyway.
Okay, I think there's something else you could do which you could have somebody look at all your clients and to see if they have the right kind of employee benefit plan. If they have a SEP or maybe a one-person 401k or anything else. And then offer some of that consulting. There's got to be
this. What's your fee for this consulting here?
I see a field day. In fact, I wrote a book on it called 77 Ways to Wow, where I have a checklist of 77 added things you could do for clients, but that 77 has grown into a couple of hundred. And it's all
easy, yeah.
Added stuff from what exists. So let me ask you, where do you see your business 5 years from now?
That's another good question. Honestly, I don't know, because I've been so focused on what I'm doing with this rap stuff now and this school that I'm starting. So I could tell you clearly what the vision is for Accounting High in 5 years, but for my firm?
It's the vision for Accounting High.
Well, Accounting High is...
But you have a vision, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So let me ask you a question. You don't have to answer it. You may not know it or you may not want to share it, but how much revenue can you generate from Accounting High 5 years from today?
Probably not nearly as much as I could with my firm.
Okay, well, let me tell you something else. But you might like it better, so you might want to...
I love it, yeah.
But if you did a projection of your existing CPA practice and had a five-year plan, and let's say it's going to grow $500,000 in volume if you do nothing. If you just raise fees 5-8% a year, you're gonna get up another $500,000 one way or the other. You've added $500,000 to your net worth. in addition to the money that you're going to be making every year. On accounting high, what is that going to become? Are you going to end up with half a million viewers that you're going to sell airtime advertising to people? People are not going to, will people pay you to be on your platform? So from a business standpoint, but you have any hobbies, by the way?
The rapping is pretty much my hobby.
Okay, I collect stamps. So I like to play with my stamps now. People think you buy stamps, you're going to get rich. No, I buy stamps that are worthless, pieces of crap. But I have a lot of fun. I write articles about it. I exhibit
it. It's like art.
I mount it up.
It is art.
What?
It's art. You're participating in art. The stamps themselves are art.
That's right. And I'm enjoying it, but it's not my business.
Right.
But my business, I wanted to make money and I wanted to grow a business, which leads me to a different question, which I asked you yesterday. If you have a marketing person, and the answer is no, you're the marketing person.
Yeah. I think a lot of all I'm doing with this accounting high is a big marketing experiment too. In a lot of ways, like a lot of the stuff I'm doing is just experimenting with different marketing strategies. We still haven't found, it's one thing you didn't even ask me too, is a niche, like, or you did in one of the preliminary questions, but we still don't have one of those at the firm. And that's one of my biggest insecurities is I have a firm that doesn't have a clear industry vertical. And if we did, there's so many things, there's so much, the vision explodes from there.
Let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah.
You don't do any consulting for your clients.
Right.
You do what's there. If you have one client that you say, I'm going to see if I can help this guy with something, whatever it is, cash flow planning, inventory management, looking over his accounts receivable, you've now become a consultant in the industry that client is in. And then you find another client in that same industry and you do the same thing. You now have a niche.
Yeah.
You don't go wake up one day, say, I want a niche. I want to have a niche in TV stations and try to get a TV station client.
Well, you did that. We've heard your stories of doing that. And it was because of that one client that wanted to have a TV station.
You read what I wrote?
No, it was when you were on our show. You talked about the guy who needed to the tax write-off, and he bought the TV station just for the write-off.
That's right. That was my biggest client ever in terms of fees, and that goes back to 1980. The fees I got from him each year from 1980 to about 86, 87, any one of those years was higher than any fee I got from any client in any year afterwards. And we're talking about inflation now.
Yeah. Well, and that guy still needed to pay you an extra 100 grand or something that he did eventually or something like that.
Yeah, he asked for a bonus. I helped sell his company. He asked for a $200,000 bonus.
And he gave you 100.
He sent the check. He didn't want to confront me. So he sent the 100,000 to my checking account.
Which is still dope.
The point is, don't worry about it. A niche is a marketing thing.
Yeah.
But if you have one or two clients in an industry, you could become familiar with that industry just by asking the clients what their problems are. And that's how you develop a niche. And then from that niche, you join the trade associations, you start reading the trade journals, you get more involved with the, and that's how you build a niche. Don't worry, you got a pretty good general practice like I had. Mm-hmm. You had a lot of clients, but it's when you start doing that little extra, we call it advisory services or consulting services. When you start that little extra thing for one client, that gets you started on a niche for that industry.
I love the way you put that too, because it makes it less overwhelming.
Yeah, because to start in any niche is totally overwhelming. And I give you another example. You have a client that whatever, he's a real estate broker. So you go to you join the real estate board. You go to their meetings. You just show up. Now I'm going to tell you one step further. You said you're really doing the marketing. I had a practice that was a little bigger than yours when I merged into with it, but I had a full-time marketing person because I was doing what you were doing and I didn't want to do the marketing or the other. So we hired a marketing person and she joined all the organizations and she represented our firm. It helped that she was very attractive. People came over to her, but she brought in a lot of business. She had a lot of referrals that then we sold.
Yeah. So you got a pretty face to handle a lot of the marketing. Energy, young.
Energy, young. She also became the client-facing person.
Ooh.
I'll give you an example. This funny story. We sent out tax returns by FedEx. And she would call the next day afternoon to see if they got it. Because if I called, they want to know what the refund was. All that other stuff. So she called. And she called the guy. We have a client whose name was Joseph Banana, not the gangster. His name was Joseph Banana. And he had an insurance agency and a big store, very big store. He owned the whole building in Manhattan. And a big sign, Joseph Banano Agency, and he didn't get his tax return. And she started this before you could track the stuff with FedEx.
Yeah.
And she researched it with FedEx, and it turns out they said they couldn't locate the business. but the bottom line is
it had a big sign with his name on it. They still couldn't find it. Nobody's paying attention. Yeah.
But anyway, when you look at what you're doing as a business, You do want aid and services, but you also want to grow with the client, have the client know that they could grow with you.
I've been on this quest for growth for a while with all this extra free time that I've had. And I think I'm still trying to find my calling, and I don't know what it is I'm looking for. It's probably right in front of me. It's probably half of the stuff that you said right here is, and it's been right in front of me the whole time. I've been performing, and I've been rapping, and I've been doing this show, and I've been doing tournaments for the accounting profession. I'm trying to teach what I learned. I think part of the other thing that I want to do is I want to help people get to where I got that want it. So maybe I need to be a coach. Maybe I need to coach firm owners too, to help them maybe position themselves to have more free time and to get themselves out of that cycle that they're in.
That's great. But I'm also going to tell you how you could become a consultant for your clients. Pick of your three largest business clients, look at their P&Ls, the tax return, the balance sheet, and try to come up with an added service you could do for one of those three clients. Whether you charge for it or not, it doesn't matter because it doesn't matter because you're in a learning mode. If you tell a client, I want to help you with your cash flow.
Okay.
And you look at his cash flow one way, but he might be looking at it another way. I had a manufacturing client. I was going to help him with his inventory. It turns out he measured his inventory by the pounds of steel that he had in inventory and the pounds of steel that was shipped out every day. I could have worked for 2 years on this guy every week for 2 years. I would never come up with pounds of steel.
Right.
But by talking to him, so obviously I didn't charge for that kind of time. I was trying to learn more about the business so I could help him, which I eventually learned a lot and helped them a lot. But you don't have to make money on every encounter with a client, but pick your three largest clients and try to figure out something you could do for them and then try to do it.
I love that.
And that gets you into consulting. It finds out what's important to the client. And now you have something extra to teach to other accountants.
Look at that. You're the guy with all the answers. This is all the answers I've been looking for. You found your way to my door and you've been mentoring me this whole time. This is dope. And this is for everybody too, because anybody listening can take a lot of this advice and run with it. And it's practical too. All the articles I've ever read that you write are so down to earth too. You're not speaking over top of anybody, or you're not telling them all these platitudes of you got to do this and this and this to sell them some, you know. It's just practical real life advice.
Well,
that's all I got to say for that.
I'm doing what you said you'd like to do. I'm passing on what I learned. You know, a lot of people that are consultants, they're trying to get clients that they could do mergers and acquisitions for and make the fees. I don't do that.
You have no interest in that. You're trying to share. You're trying to spread your knowledge.
That's really what I'm trying to give back. I'm trying to pay back the people that helped me. And I, by doing it so many times, I'm not telling you I started out doing it great. I started out being terrible. But
yeah,
I would get questions and people would follow up. They didn't understand something. They would call me. I was always accessible. And then I got good at it.
Right.
And then what happens is people call me. I get ideas. I don't wake up in the morning with ideas. I wake up waiting for the phone to ring from my accountant with a problem. And then I help. I just posted something Monday about what happens if you say you practice and the guy reneges on it. The guy screws up. I wrote something 2 months ago and somebody said, well, I thought you were going to write about that. So I said, well, let me think about it. And then someone else called me who had a problem. So I wrote something. Now, I'm not saying that I know everything about it, but...
Well, you know from your experience, and you've probably seen a situation where somebody reneged on buying a practice.
I got to tell you something. I have been very, very lucky in that every practice I bought worked out, and everything worked out the way it was supposed to.
So you say it's luck. Is it luck that these things work out the way they do and that they continue to work out? Or is it some intuition, or is it something else that you're doing that leads to a positive outcome?
Well, I think it's luck on one hand. The other hand is, you said that you're very particular about the clients that you take on. Well, I probably could have done more deals than I did. Maybe the ones I turned down would not have worked out.
Yeah.
So I would say that it's luck, and it's also not wanting to take on more than I can handle at any given time. And I tell you, it's luck because one time, my partner and I were at a cocktail party in the Catskills in one of these hotels. And we met a guy at the cocktail party. And it was at one of these Catskill hotels, resorts. And we made a deal talking to him right then and there to buy his practice. We followed up a week later and we bought his practice. And then I met Bill. I bought a practice in February. We bought in February of 2024. We bought a practice. Imagine buying a practice.
There is no 2024 yet.
2022? No, 2004 in February, a guy called us, had to sell his practice right away. We bought it. We made a deal in less than 3 weeks. But between the 3 weeks, we made a deal with buyer's practice. I borrowed $100,000 from the bank as a down payment. And then in June, I met Bill Hagerman from Witham, and he wanted to have lunch. So I said to my two partners, look, he wants to merge. That's why these guys want to have lunch. Come with me. You'll hear how it goes, because we're not interested in merging, but you'll hear how the act goes. We had a great lunch. After lunch, he said, look, if you want to merge, this is the deal we do. This is what we want. This is how we proceed. When he left, we said, holy crap, this is a great deal. We did it.
Oh, so you had no intention of doing it.
We had no intention. We had just bought a practice. We just bought a practice.
And it worked out.
Worked out. Not only did it work out great, but every merger that I saw with him make has worked out. They didn't do one bad merger.
There's no bad merger. What was it about this whole, the preliminary stage that, and I know you're saying you're selective, but what kind of alignment are you looking for? Or what kind of, what is it that, why these are working out? Because it seems like once you do crack that code, other mergers obviously seem easier. So do you have any advice or any?
Yeah, you gotta do due diligence. You gotta check on the people. First, it's the people. Even though they're gone, when we took over practices, we bought practices, people were gone. We called it, we didn't want them around. But you want to see what kind of person they were, what kind of work they did. You want to know what kind of clients they had, if there was an alignment with us. And then obviously you don't meet the clients. And then you look at the cash flow. The people, they give us their QuickBooks, and sure, the clients will pay their fees. When you have a client that's 3 months behind, they're not happy. They're not a happy client. So
you know what red flags to look for, the positive outcomes, because it's your mindset going into it and on the other side of it too. You could be looking at it differently and say, oh, this was a failure because all of these people left, but that's not the outcome you were looking for in the first place.
Well, when we bought this practice in February, we promised that we would do all the tax returns at the same fees he was charging. He was charging $157.50.
Lost leader for you after that.
Well, I got to tell you something. One of the clients that that we bought, he was getting $16,000 a year fee. The first year we collected $45,000. The second year we collected $106,000. So it wasn't a loss leader. That was the one client that we might have wanted from the practice. We got others from 2004. But we did the tax returns. We got them done. We didn't keep any. We maybe kept five clients that were better. The rest we got rid of. So we knew that right from the beginning. But he felt he had his obligation to these people.
Sure.
And made one mistake. If I would have raised them all $10, I would have got the $10.
Oh, you could have raised them. Yeah, you could have raised them.
Couldn't raise them. I said we would do it the same fee. But if I would have raised them $10, they would have paid it.
Sure.
But I left money on the table, but no big
deal. Sometimes that's part of the positive outcome is you're not you're not rocking the boat too much too during a transition.
You want to get along. You don't want the last dollar, and you want everybody to be happy. And you want to. We bought long-term relationships. But I got to ask you one other question, which is a big deal, not for me, but it's a big deal for I know some of the people that you interview. I know you keep time records, but you don't do billing, which is fine. What do you do with the time records that you keep?
I think we're capacity planning with it. I think that was always the intent, was measuring what our capacity was in the first place, because after you transition to a hybrid environment or a fully remote environment, it's really hard to see and obtain an idea of how much capacity somebody has, because they're always going to say that they're at capacity. They'll find ways to fill the time with work. But if there was a common way that we can measure up, okay, well, this person says they're at capacity and they are. So we're just, in a way, trying to plan and measure what that was. That's how it started. Because we never measured time or track time prior to that. Prior to maybe 2019, 2020 that we started. Actually, you know what? I think we started tracking it in 2021 or after 2020. That we start tracking time. Me personally, I haven't gone back and looked at any of it. I don't ever track mine, and I couldn't when we started doing it. I was the one person that was never tracking, so there's that. But the team doesn't seem to mind. They don't really complain about the tracking of it, and we're using it to plan out our capacity, I guess.
Okay, good. I'm just curious about it. I think that's a good reason for doing it. They keep time records. Even a firm like Witham, every quote is on a time basis. But then we give an estimate, and that estimate becomes the fee, the low point or the high point of the fee.
Sure, sure.
It becomes a fixed fee. So my attitude is, if you're going to do an estimate, just give a fixed fee. Get it over.
Yeah, just give a fixed fee. And sometimes you're not going to get it right. Sometimes you'll get it too right. Sometimes you'll make a killing because you estimate it's going to take longer. That usually doesn't happen. But you always got to estimate it based on something. And so we use that. And now we have historical records that we can kind of use to base our estimates so we can get closer. So it's about the data too, and having the data is better than not having it. So that's why we started tracking it. I know my principal at Accounting High would not be too pleased to hear this. I want to have him on. I was going to have him hop on during our recording so we can do a debate on this, but that's Ron Baker. Eventually, I'm going to have you guys both on at the same time, and we'll get to talking about this.
First of all, I read all his books. I've heard him speak every time I had an opportunity. He could talk me under the table, but he's living in a time warp of because he's still talking about timesheets, which nobody's doing anymore.
Nobody's using timesheets because the computer's tracking a lot of this for us. We click a button.
Let's move to the next step. I don't know what his next step is, but
his next step is subscriptions. And he doesn't talk as much about the value price.
You're doing subscriptions with all your clients. I've been doing subscriptions when I started my own practice in 1970.
I know this. Yeah. And that's the kind of thing. It's the eloquence of his prose too. The way that he presents it, it's powerful. People believe it.
Is all the arguments. I would never probably argue with him because I would never win. But
he's passionate.
But I'm practicing and I do it. I live through it. And I have I don't know how many clients he's ever spoken to. He's given them a change order in the middle of a war.
Yep.
You ran out of bullets. Hey, wait a minute. I give you the bullets, but I need another $5,000.
I love that.
It's great advice. Well, he gives great advice. He has one thing that he hasn't fleshed out, which I think he should. He called key predictive indicators. That hasn't caught on. I think that's a brilliant idea. And I think it's even more important.
Instead of key performance indicators, key
predictive indicators. I forget which book he wrote it in, but I think it's brilliant. I try to do it. I'm very big on KPIs, which I do completely different than most people. But his key predictive indicators and using it like that, I think, are great.
He should
talk about that more. But you make more money talking about pricing than about advising clients.
Of course. What are your thoughts on OKRs?
What's the OKRs? Yeah,
you like your KPIs. What about OKRs, objectives and key results?
I never heard that expression, but okay. I got to tell you something.
Well, the only reason I'm bringing it up is because it's my rap name, too. I tried to pull the double entendre. I didn't go KPI. OKRs is another one that they talk about. A lot of tech companies talk about it, too. That's their objectives and key results. It's similar to their key predictive indicators.
There's a point that everybody's missing. You got to give information to a client that they can act on. And when you have, I've seen these fantastic dashboards. People don't look at the dashboards. Like the guy that I told you who measured the pounds of steel. That was his KPI, the number of pounds. That's all he needed to know. I could give him 8 dashboards. Doesn't mean a thing. It'd be too much, and he couldn't act on it. But the pounds each day he could. In an accounting firm, maybe you want to know how many chargeable hours staff are working as a percentage of total hours. Maybe you want to know how much billings or how much cash came in. 3 numbers, 4 numbers, that's all a client should get every day. But all these other things, we overload them. I've read books now on KPIs, which they morphed into dashboards because dashboards could be set up very easily and quickly.
Easy. And you can now make them colorful and fancy. And it doesn't mean anything. Like you can have 3 numbers that you're tracking that mean something, that give you a sense of where everything is at and where it's going. And if you can keep your tabs on that, that's the easiest thing. I have a few numbers that I keep up with. It's how many clients do we have? What's our average monthly fee? Yeah. Or our monthly recurring revenue, those numbers. That's it. That's typically what I look at these days because that's what matters.
That's churn. Right. And now if you hired somebody to set up dashboard for you, you get 8 separate graphs. They will look different. They look great. They're in color. And it wouldn't serve the same purpose as the 3 numbers that you paid
attention. Would distract me. It would be a distraction because it's not what I need to see. Or maybe it is. Maybe somebody does put something great together.
Well, if it was great together, they don't have to tell it in 8 ways. They could tell it in 1 way.
Yeah. Keep it simple.
Keep it simple. KISS.
That's the acronym we should all be kissing.
Kissing. Anyway, you have any final comments you want to make?
Nah, I mean, it's one of those things where I've talked about this stuff a lot. And it's time for me to start putting some action into it. And I always say, like, I had a conversation with Ron Baker about sitting on 2 bar stools. He talks about that. He says that a lot. You know, like, I have a calling in one area and somewhere else. I'm really passionate about it. And I don't care as much about making the money anymore as I used to. That was my passion, to grow the business. Is I wanted to make more money and any way I could. And that was the driver. And it stopped being about that. And so now I got to find a balance between, I know how to make money. My parents call me a rainmaker. Like I can go back and do that again, but I got to have some purpose with it and drive something else. Try to blend these things together. Maybe, you know, I like talking and I like people. And if I can continue to be around people and continue to have these conversations and build on new ideas and do new things and also make money doing it, that's great. But I think it's about that.
Let me give 1 or 2 takeaways for the audience.
Sure.
First of all, try to do a 5-year projection of where you're going to be in 5 years and how you're going to get there via practice. You mentioned capacity planning, which is great. What I would do is sit down today and make a list of everybody working for you and the approximate number of hours that they could work next year.
Well, I downplay some of the stuff that we do, because we are doing EOS, and I do have the 3-year and 5-year projections of where we'll be and all those, the rocks and the things that we need to do. I've just kind of removed myself and removed that from my thought patterns too. But I actually like where you're going with that suggestion of the capacity suit. I want you to keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt there.
No, but if you want to put extra life into the practice part of it,
yeah,
look at how you could help clients make more money or grow their business. And if you could come up with a couple of clients that you could do that for. I once had a lot of basketball players, and actors and actresses, people like that. And people said, it must be real exciting having them as clients. I said, no, actually, they're not exciting clients. They're exciting people, but they're not exciting clients because the work I do for them is routine. It's the dull, boring manufacturing companies that I might help them rechange their course system, or help them reposition them with their customer, where I get the charge out of. It's what I do for my clients that's exciting, not what my clients do. So if you look at one of your three largest clients and figure out how you can help them, and then go through the motions, whether you charge them or not is not important, and see if it brings back some of that excitement. And you got 100 people to work with.
I don't know if it's going to be the same excitement as performing a rap on stage. That's been the most exciting thing I could possibly do.
Well, good for you.
That's been dope. I'm performing next week. I don't think you'll be there, but it'll be in Orlando. There's a tax conference, and I'm premiering the Tax Accountant's Anthem. You do taxes. You guys do taxes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll share it with you when I release it, the Tax Accountant's Anthem. I've been working on this one all year. I did a music video for it and stuff. So that's the stuff that excites me, though. Like,
you know Steve Zellman?
Yes. Yes, I know Steve.
I just was talking to him yesterday. He's great.
He is. I haven't had him on the show yet, but I got his number right here.
You should get him on your show. He's a sole practitioner with 25 people working virtually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know about his practice. I just knew he was singing.
No, he's got a very serious practice.
That's dope.
He's bought a lot of practices.
I got to talk to Steve.
Yesterday, you should give him a call.
I thought, and see, this is what people think of me too. They just think I'm out there rapping and I don't have a practice. His is actually even more impressive than mine. It's double my size. That's dope.
Anyway,
I had a great conversation with him about the raps, about the stuff that he does, because we're doing it similarly. He's just doing musically and I'm doing raps.
Yeah.
But
same thing. Yeah. He's very talented.
He is.
I met him at a County Today conference in 2010.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
And we became friends. And then a couple of years later, I gave these conferences. I wanted to give away something. So I called and he asked if I could buy 150 CDs. And he said, why? Are you kidding? I'll come and perform for free.
That's awesome. So
I bought them from him. Yeah, I paid him for it. But then he came and we became very good friends. In fact, he taught a class for me last semester. I had him as a guest lecturer in my class.
Oh, well, you've just cemented his spot on this show. I got to get him on. Now we got a lot to talk about.
I'll email you.
Yeah, please.
I'll email you a reminder. With
yeah, dope.
Anyway, I guess I could talk to you, Scotty, another couple of hours.
Oh, for sure.
This was fun.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out, too. This has been great. I've never had anybody interview me, and now I get, this is all just one revolving door too. So you'll be back. You're now considered an honorary faculty, honorarium here at Accounting High. You've taught us a lot. You've taught our students a lot. And I appreciate you, Ed. You're awesome. Always learning. Always got stuff to share. I was going to just stop by the Witham building on my way up to New York and try to find you, but I didn't think you were there.
Well, if you're going to be there, let me know. I haven't been there on a weekday since COVID started.
Oh, wow.
I was there one time since COVID started. I taught a class. It was Bring Your Kids to Work Day. So I taught the kids what accountants do. I had about 15.
I mean, every time I'm passing there, it's late at night anyway, because it's lit up and I see the big Witham from the turnpike.
If you're going to be there during the day, let me know. I live 10 minutes from there.
Oh, dope. All right. I will. I got your number now, too. Well, appreciate you, Ed. Thanks for coming on. And
this
students,
class,
class dismissed.
Class is in session. It's time for shopperations at accounting. Hi, class is in session. It's time for shopperations at accounting. Hi. Hey, class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Kids, do you like operations? It's Wednesday, Accounting High, talking systems and processes, talking shop about operational balances, accounting, workbench to workflow challenges, hybrid teams for Pete's sake. I'm trying to manage through screens, but I can't figure out which Zoom window's my next meeting. And Dr. K says,
Acuity uses EOS. Entrepreneurial operating system.
Well, since 2012, my firm's been in the cloud. Join us as we go deep. I'll try not to run it to the ground. We're sharing profit and loss and managing back office. The tax staff just quit. Tried to hire on LinkedIn. No luck. And scope creep team count cast. Automate tax, compliance transactions, ID and bottlenecks. Come on, ops. Scotty, wait a minute. It's my firm, dog. I know, and I said you could run it however you want. Hi, class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High. Class is in session. It's time for Shopperations at Accounting High.